everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to be examining the G1234N5 level of the electromagnetic frequencies, our cell phones, our computers, the Internet of all things. And what impact will this have on our health? On the one hand, we have been led to believe that they are safe and it will improve the quality of our lives. This is the common theme in the media, including the New York Times. And also the government is very much behind this, as are all of the social media, Google, Facebook, and the entirety of the telecommunications industry, which controls a great deal of the media. But that's not the truth. Once again, we have been manipulated. We have been lied to. Today on our program, I will share the latest actual science of why you should not trust what you have been told about the safety of your cell phone. We will be looking at a protest against the untested rollout of the 5G technology in New York City. We will also be listening to a renowned neurosurgeon, Dr. Charlie Teo, calling for the right to know about cell phone radiation, and then cell phones and brain cancer. This was an Interphone study. It was reported before Congress, and that is an old study. So the question is, if I'm bringing you today things that are brand new, as of August 2019, as well as things that are 10 and 12 years old, and if we knew about the dangers of cell phones when it was only a G1 and 2, why was nothing done? Why did no one in the mainstream media pick up on the story and promote it? Why are we going to find out only how bad it can be when we have no choice but to be impacted by these electromagnetic frequencies, with more than 20,000 satellites will be launched so that every inch of the planet will be covered? That is our story. No guests, just myself. By now, most of us should have come to realize that plant and animal and human life, it's not eternal. Everything has an expiration date. For several decades, atmospheric scientists have been warning that the orgy of anthropogenic release of greenhouse gases, if it is permitted to continue at current rates, will bring life as we know it to an end in various parts of the world. Remember, societies historically have not all collapsed at one time. The Roman Empire began to collapse in the outer regions before it reached the destruction of Rome. That is also true in virtually the Aztec and the Mesopotamian and the Mayan, etc. Right now, we are seeing the actual collapse of various aspects of our own civilization. I'll give you an example. Just in the last week, we were told that we had the hottest July ever recorded in human history. Now that says something. That says that if we go back several hundred thousand years, you're not going to find a hotter July. There was a week in New York City where it was virtually unbearable. The hottest day in France, the hottest day in Germany, occurred within the last 3 weeks. People have died. At the same time that you're having this massive heat, we had areas of our world that are historically cool to cold to freezing to very serious freezing, like the Arctic and Siberia, having 85 to 87 degree days. Greenland is melting at an astronomical level. Right now, as of today, something I said to you repeatedly over the last 10 years that I've been doing intense study of the environment, interviewing the world's leading climatologists, environmentalists, and seeing where are the tipping points, because when these points tip, you're not going to reverse it. And it just speeds up the feedback loops. Example, when it gets so warm that the Arctic melts, according to Professor Guy McPherson, Professor Emeritus of Environmental Studies, University of Arizona, then there is no way for the sun to hit the ice in the Arctic and bounce back harmlessly into the atmosphere. as the ice melts, then the water below the ice will heat up. Then the soil that has been frozen at the bottom of that shallow water will heat up as well, releasing massive amounts of methane. The methane goes into the air and causes a feedback loop. More methane, far more reliable to increase global warming than carbon dioxide, then it creates even more heat, and more heat creates more melting of the permafrost, which then creates bog fires that can never be put out. Some of these bogs are 20, 30 feet deep, and once they start burning, and they are, the Arctic is burning right now, over 1 million acres of the Arctic. Did you know that? Siberia is burning. Greenland is burning. And yet the average person is unaware. There are currently 61 million environmental immigrants in Africa alone. They have no money, no transportation, no food, and yet this isn't even on anyone's radar. Where do they go? What do? All the other countries that have taken in refugees, Jordan, Lebanon number one per population, it's a small country and has taken over 1 million refugees, and these are not environmental refugees. Jordan and Lebanon have taken in Syrian refugees, political refugees from civil wars and conflicts. So what do we do when American farmers can no longer farm? That's happening right now. What do we do when Louisiana is becoming constantly inundated with flesh-eating bacteria, as is Florida, up and down the sandy beaches? One time, pristine, pure, beautiful sunset, great to be there, and you can't go in the water because of flesh-eating bacteria in the water and now on the sand, all caused by how British Petroleum caused the mess in the Gulf with her Deep Horizon explosion, and then the chemicals used to treat the oil. And now there is a out-of-control change in the bacteria. They've adapted to mass production, and over 80,000 people in the last year were infected from flesh-eating bacteria. Over 100 died. And that's just getting it started, because it thrives on oil, and oil's all over the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. So I'm only using that as one example of what happens when the ocean gets hot and the fish die. The birds that relied upon the fish, then they die. 200 reindeer were found dead 2 weeks ago in the Nordic Arctic area, that historically this time of year would have been where they are breeding and grazing. Too hot, and their food sources are drying out. So we have these feedback loops, about 42 of them, and they're all changing for the worse. Nothing, absolutely nothing, is being done by corporations, our government, leading politicians. They'll make, give mouth service to this, and they do nothing. Now, I give you that as a background, because if we're not doing anything whatsoever, because we're not affected, you have air conditioners, so if it's 115 out, you're still cool. The fact that this air conditioning is contributing to global warming, which then creates hotter days, and now the hottest day becomes the most normal day in the next year. So now I'm told by the people I've interviewed, the real experts, the ones who weren't afraid of telling the truth, we've got a year and a half left before we begin to see the collapse of sections of the world, where they're no longer going to be sustainable. And that's already happening now. Just look at the Inuit. But nobody looks at the Inuit. They're way up north. But now they're in historical villages where they've lived for hundreds of years, are collapsing into the ocean. Farmers, this just recently, have had their fields flooded for more than 8 weeks. That means that all of that they planted, wheat, soybeans, and corn, are gone this year, and it's too late to put in another crop. They're not sticking around. That's the new norm. They can expect this every year. You're going to see the largest exodus out of Florida, around the Gulf Coast, in Florida's history. It'll virtually collapse the real estate market once the average person realizes that the value of their property being near or on the ocean or those inlets is actually less because it's a detriment to their health. Nobody wants to be in an environment that they can't enjoy. Now you see, so they can move. You can move to a place that has more sustainability. I live in a completely sustainable environment because I saw this coming, and so I moved there. I encourage this audience to move if you're in a non-sustainable environment. You don't wait to move when the hurricane is an hour away and it's a Category 5. You don't wait to move when your entire house in Northern California, in Southern California, and Middle California is surrounded by trees that have gone brown and are now fodder for the upcoming fire. You don't move when the temperature is 117 degrees and you thought, well, I should have moved, I didn't, where can I move? It's too late. That's why I predict we're going to see the collapse of parts of our world now, and then wait till you see Category 5 or 6 hurricane hit one of the major cities. Then suddenly everybody's attention will be gained. But where do you go? Where do you hide? How do you protect yourself from a 5G rollout that's going to be insidious and putting electromagnetic pulses through your body 24/7? So, nevertheless, we're living in a time when we don't know the concept of a Cassandra warning. One thing is certain, for anyone who bothers to follow the steady flow of climate change reports and updates, every year conditions are becoming more dire than the previous years. And as scientists consistently have had to reevaluate their earlier predictions, like as I mentioned with Greenland, they're now saying, as of today, that Greenland is melting 50 to 70 years faster than what any mathematical model had predicted. We predicted it. We said we're in chaos. Remember, if you've listened to any of my environmental programs, and I've done more environmental programs than any other journalist in the world. I do them weekly, writing articles. No one paid attention. Now, the situation is turning very drastic. But not to be outdone by the fossil fuel industry's addiction to burning fossil fuels, nor our blustering neoliberal capitalist rush to establish full-spectrum economic dominance, the telecommunications industry in Silicon Valley are eager to enter the horse race to imperil human existence. In the past, we have regularly reported on the corruption that is endemic in our federal health agencies and the pharmaceutical industry, in the nuclear power industry, and always in the industrial agricultural industry. Now, we're going to address the culture of deception that permeates the telecommunications and wireless regime, and its irresponsible denialism about electromagnetic frequency radiation effects on the planet and life. And by the way, all the bees that go near these cell towers, they die. First, they have what was called bee drunkenness. No, it's the complete disruption of the central nervous system, and they're honing a natural in-body radar, and then they die. And bees are responsible for one out of every three foods that you consume. The rollout of 5G, which means fifth-generation technology across the nation, is being framed as a sprint contest against China, which is also determined to transition to 5G. Europe, in defiance of American pressures, is now learning that, well, what can they do? Unfortunately, they are also corrupt, and they're allowing 5G as well. In fact, they're expecting within the next 5 years that about 40% of the world's population will be connected to the 5G network. It could be sooner. That means that tens of billions of devices, from cars to refrigerators, from toasters to traffic lights, from hair dryers to surveillance equipment and utility smart meters, and virtually every phone, will be interlinked to a global web of electromagnetic frequency technologies. Nothing with an electronic chip will be exempt. No plant or tree, no insect, bird, fish, animal, or mammal will be able to escape 24-hour daily exposure to enormous amounts of electromagnetic pollution. Already, this generation's technology is being aggressively promoted and marketed to the public without any mention of its catastrophic risks. The organization Physicians for Safe Technology is now warning that its predictable adverse effect will create, quote, biological, environmental, as well as societal disruption, and will be, quote, difficult or impossible to reverse. Whereas the current 4G technology succeeded in a complete digital migration, enabling higher speeds for mobile phones and video and internet interfaces, in the words of President Obama's FCC chair, Tom Wheeler, 5G will be, quote, the internet of everything. If something can be connected, Wheeler told a national press conference at the press club in 2016, it will be connected in the 5G world, but with predictions of hundreds of billions of microchip-enabled products, from pill bottles to plant waters, you can be sure of only one thing. The biggest IoT, which is Internet of Things, has yet to be imagined. And all of this will be controlled by artificial intelligence, which has the capacity to be smarter than any of its programs or programmers. In fact, right now, there are just a few ethical silicon scientists who have stated that they are afraid of this artificial intelligence because it could create and write its own programs, and then what if it goes rogue? It could bring down airplanes. It could stop electricity. It could turn off nuclear power plants and cause them to explode. That's what's possible. Yet you don't hear a thing about that. As one of them said, Wheeler, quote, the 5G revolution will touch all corners, and that is damn important. Yes. That's also damn crazy, you fool. The Obama administration's FCC launched the Spectrum Frontiers rules to mandate 5G rollout as a national priority. It was no national priority. Like everything else that gentleman did, it was based upon who was going to support him, his policies, and the neoliberal agenda. In the rules, we find a disturbing initiative that is technology will drive policy rather than vice versa. What that means is that, in other words, the private telecommunications industry complex is being given precedence over elected legislators, over town councils, over mayors and governors, over state legislators, even including congressional leaders who voice deep concerns about 5G threats. It also has precedence over the warnings voiced by the medical, health, and environmental agencies, meaning there is no power in the United States, and hence the world, that would be able to prevent 5G from being located wherever it wants. If it wants to put it on your house, you'll have no choice. You'll have no court you can go to where they will not win. That's the reality. Unfortunately, the New York Times excluded that reality in its pro-5G cheerleading. However, the 5G race actually goes back to the Clinton White House. Why should that surprise us? In 1996, Clinton foolishly, but he was never a fool. Everything the Clintons did, they did as a maniacal, pathological tag team. And in that respect, they handed over to the telecommunications industry carte blanche power over state and local governments to install 5G technologies anywhere, at any time, without getting any community, city or state or federal approval, they had it. The Telecommunications Act is a dismal piece of legislation. It is another incident where Clinton was a far more loyal enabler to private corporate interest instead of the public. Clinton's TCA decrees that no health or environmental concern can interfere with telecommunications installations and, by extension, profits. It gives full power to the FCC to regulate telecom's electromagnetic frequencies' health effects. Yet the FCC is not a health agency, nor is the FCC in any way associated with biomedical experts. In addition, the Act takes away the authority of town, city, and county councils to rule against FCC stations and cell tower installations, and if towns vote to prevent 5G towers being erected near a school or children's park or a crowded neighborhood, the companies had the right to sue. For example, in the prosperous town of Moringa in the South Francisco Bay Area, town council efforts are underway to prevent the installation of a 5G cell tower. The initiative is being launched by a woman whose husband, a heavy cell phone user since the mid-1980s, developed a brain tumor near the ear where he held the phone for many years. Moringa is mobilized to bring a halt to the tower, but it's a losing battle. And there are similar cases occurring throughout the country as the public becomes increasingly warned about 5G health risks. No argument can be raised against the benefits that wireless technologies have brought to the world. They have contributed to remarkable advances in medical diagnostic tools, security equipment, better telecommunications networks for governments and business and organizations, entertainment, faster connections on the World Wide Web, connected to the Internet with mobile phones, and much more. Consequently, it has also been a boon for job growth, but their disadvantages and defects have largely been hidden by intent from public view. And the telecommunications industry and government officials have been completely aware of these risks for over a half a century. Other risks are being identified and described as independent research and analysis outside the purview of corporate telecom oversight committees. Unfortunately, the government is not investing in the necessary safety studies to determine whether rolling out 5G is a wise policy. Wheeler, the initial architect for the nation's 5G strategy, has never acknowledged that there are known health risks associated with electromagnetic frequencies. He is a product of the same private industry mindset that has churned out climate change deniers in the big oil companies and pesticide and GMO risk deniers in big agriculture. So Americans need to wake up to the fact that they are facing a formidable enemy in the telecommunications industry. You can move from a place that's too hot, or in a fault line where there's an earthquake potential, or near gas hydrofracking where the water and soil and air is contaminated. You can't get away from 5G the way they're setting it up in their massive worldwide grid. And by the way, we're going to play you a few tapes now, but remember, we found and we've posted on Progressive Radio Network's website, prn.fm, the letter the 26,000 scientists signed that showed the dangers of 5G and asking for a moratorium till health studies were done. This was sent to every government in the world and all the major health organizations. You didn't know it because none of the media would publish it. What does it tell you when the entirety of American media, from MSNBC and all the dancing clowns there and the laptop dogs at CNN, who will do anything that the establishment tells them, they wouldn't tell you that there's warnings that 26,000 scientists signed a petition? Did you know that there are 10,000 scientific studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing the dangers of the G1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? No, you were not told. But you will learn that, unfortunately, the hard way. Now we're going to go to a short clip of a protest that I helped lead against the untested rollout of 5G technology in New York City just a few days ago.
Rollout and followed through and did a lot of research and gathered some people who have joined in this effort. We're called New York City 5G Wake Up Call. People are oblivious with all the advertising for the joys of high-speed downloads, that there are thousands of studies that actually prove microwave damage to biological processes over time.
We're dealing with a really formidable affront to our health, our privacy, our security, our future, animal life, bees, insects.
It's already happening in New York City and many other cities around the country. They're rolling it out, and the effects are horrendous. They can be horrendous. A dear close friend of mine came to me about 2 months ago, called me up, and said, I can't live in my apartment building anymore. They just installed 25 smart meters in the basement, and I've got nosebleeds and heart palpitations and headaches. I can't stay here. She and her husband live there. So he's still living there. She's living upstate because she literally can't live there.
This year, there was a congressional hearing. At that congressional hearing, a U.S. Legislator asked a group of individuals representing the telecom industry, how much money are you spending on human studies to show that this technology is safe? How many studies are you doing? To no one's surprise, the industry spokespersons, two of them, said none. Not a penny was being spent, nor would it be spent, nor were any studies done. There were two problems with their answer and his question, because he showed concern. Representative Blumenthal. The issue was, as a member of Congress, he has direct access to the National Academy of Science, our most august body of science in America. He has access to all of the millions of studies in the peer-reviewed literature on PubMed, the government's own website where they only select high-quality peer-reviewed studies. Now, when you realize what goes on behind the scenes in a legislator's office, rarely, except for bills they personally sponsor or are top co-sponsors, 90% of the work and the education on an issue comes by the staff. And it's not the chief of staff. That's the political coordinator. That's the person that decides which lobbyists are going to have a meeting with your legislator and pitch their deal to give your legislator money so the legislator will pass favorably a bill or law that benefits that industry. It is the people by the dozens that work for legislators who are tasked, and these are highly educated, frequently lawyers. They're very, very capable of surfing the internet, and they, within a five minutes, could have found that there are 10,000 studies showing the deleterious effects of electromagnetic frequencies from 1G to 5G. So what does it tell you when a person asks a question but does not then provide an answer? Now, most of these are lawyers, and there's a rule in law. And that rule in law is never ask a question of someone that you are challenging if you don't know the answer, because you're opening a door that something could come through with you that could cause your case. So that meant to me that the people are then going to use the idea, well, we care about your health. We held hearings. Yeah, you held hearings. Why didn't you say at that hearing, legislator, there are over 26,000 scientists that signed a letter that went to every government in the world saying don't use 5G because it has not been adequately tested on humans. You didn't talk about that letter. You didn't invite one of those 26,000 scientists. You invited no environmental scientists. You invited no toxicologists. You invited no medical doctors or expert in environmental chemical sensitivity. That means to me it was a sham dog and pony hearing, which is 99% of these hearings. People are using it so that they can get more votes by saying, well, we came down on the side of the consumer. No, you didn't. You didn't at all. Who's responsible? Before you protest something, understand what you're protesting. You should be protesting the Clintons because it was Bill Clinton.
All right, that's just a little bit of a longer discussion that was had just in the last few days where I led this protest against 5G. Now let's go to a renowned neurosurgeon, Dr. Charlie Teo, T-E-O, calling for the right to know about cell phone radiation. And mind you, we're not even accepting in our society today that your cell phone by itself can cause all forms of problems with your body, from brain cancers to defective sperm to breast cancer, women who put a cell phone in their bra, or kids sleeping with the cell phone under their head, or how close you are to a computer in the blue screen and what it does for our vision. So let's hear what he has to say.
Being a specialist in brain cancer, I can tell you that brain cancer is a terrible cancer, like you alluded to. It's the number one cancer killer in children. It kills more children than any other disease, and it kills more young adults than any other cancer. And you're right, it has been ranked number one by all studies in developing countries as the cancer that has the greatest socioeconomic impact on society. The cost is in the billions, of course, in both your country and our country when it comes to brain cancer. That's what I do know. I also know that I had a patient who had brain cancer who was exposed to huge amounts of EMR from owning a transport company. He said he was on it for at least 8 hours a day, and so were his partners. And they weren't related at all, but he died of brain cancer. All four partners in the company died of brain cancer. And then his wife rang us up 2 years after he died to say that the secretary, who was also on the mobile phone, died of brain cancer. So I do know that if you're exposed enough to EMR, you will get brain cancer and you'll die from it. I'm sure you are aware of the studies showing that if you live around high tensile electrical wires, these were studies out of Scandinavia, but then validated by a study out of Chicago showing that you have a higher incidence of leukemia and brain cancer if you live around high tensile wires. So we do know that. That's a fact. We also know that brain cancer is increasing in frequency. We know that is a fact. And the other thing that I think is most scary is the fact that those of you who are scientists in the room would realise that statistically it takes a lot of robust data to prove... to negate a null hypothesis. And with the Interphone study, it was designed to show that there was no link between brain cancer and mobile phone usage, but indeed it showed that there was a link in those people who use their phones for what they call high usage, which was only half an hour a day. I also know that they excluded two very, very high-risk groups, and that is children, less than 18, and corporate users of mobile phones who tend to use their phone more than other people. So I think that's unfair. And I also know that the lead author of that study was upset that they didn't include children and went on to, of course, study children in another study. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that we do know that are very concerning. I also know that Australia is very poor in terms of truth in labelling. I'm also a great advocate for animal welfare. And I'm sure you are all aware of the terrible usage of palm oil and the destruction of the habitat of orangutans to get palm oil. We simply asked the government back in 2008-2009 to have truth in labelling so that we would know which products contained palm oil and which didn't, so that the public would have a fair say in what product they used. And of course that was rejected, even though it had bipartisan support before a contingent of vested interest people came out from Borneo and changed their minds. So when it comes to mobile phones, I think Australia could take the lead. I mean, we took the lead when it came to compulsory seatbelt wearing, compulsory helmet, to bicycle helmet wearing, and we saw the major health benefits from those two initiatives. I'd love to see Australia come up with a truth in labelling when it comes to mobile phones.
I was going to say, these issues of palm oil and cell phone radiation, mobile phone radiation, share the fact that truth in labelling is what's needed. And you have a right to know, basic right to know, is a fact essential to democracy. Democracy rests on the freely given consent of the governed to be governed. Right? You consent to be governed. And in order to consent to be exposed to mobile phone radiation, you have to know what you're being exposed to. And here you have the manufacturers putting the information deep within the operating system, and people are completely unaware of it. So I think that with your leadership and with people here in this room, such as Karen, Chris, and others, the right to know whether it's palm oil or mobile phone radiation ought to be heartily supported. It's long overdue, and I think the thing for me that's so exciting, he said, this really is an honor to meet you, is to realize that you're a leader on that issue and that perhaps together we can do something positive on this one as well. Because it's clear that industry is aware, You cannot keep a phone in your pocket without exceeding the as-tested guidelines, right? You all did not know that, right? Your heart is an electric organ. So is your brain. You want to protect them. If you have to keep a phone in your pocket, put it on airplane mode. This month's issue of Consumer Reports, a major national publication in the United States, highly respected, says nobody should keep a phone in their pocket when it's on. So maybe we can talk more with the audience here. If you have questions for Dr. Teo or me, we'd love to talk more about my presentation. And because you are an expert on this issue, I invite you to share that stage with me. Perhaps we can get a chair up here so we can sit together. Is that possible? Right. Thank you, Chris.
All right. You heard what he had to say about brain cancer, that is real, and it is real. But now we're going to hear another clip, completely different, a government committee on cell phone and brain cancer by itself. This was the Interphone study. Mind you, this is an old study, and I'm playing this simply to show you that time and again we have found that industries promoting particular therapies, pharmaceutical therapies, or in this case, cell phone therapies and 5G therapies or technologies, have had an awareness of their dangers. The tobacco industry knew for decades that it was both addictive and caused lung conditions like cancer and emphysema and COPD, which is a form of emphysema. We knew that Monsanto kept saying there is no link between glyphosate or Roundup, their herbicide, and different diseases. But then through a Freedom of Information Act, 10,000 documents over a 30-year period were revealed that they had known there were multiple cancers that were caused from their product. And yet they were not put out of business. Their charter was not revoked by the federal government. They were allowed to continue doing business. Now, there have been three cases against Monsanto for its glyphosate causing cancer, but now there are 18,000, and they'll probably double in the next few years. But why didn't we know this from the beginning? Because they hid it from us. They didn't want the public knowing the truth. So they have had knowledge of the dangers of DDT and heptachlor and aldrin and Agent Orange and PCBs and cigarette smoking and artificial sweeteners. They hid it from the public, knowing that the worst that could happen is they'll pay a fine. Just like Facebook paid a $5 billion fine for allowing its users' personal information to become available through people that it was third persons that they were selling it to. And they paid a $5 billion fine, and they had an increase in the value of their stock. After all, if you're worth, let's say, $500 billion, $5 billion, 1%, it's meaningless. So that's why it's important to realize that when we were told our cell phones, even with 1G, were safe, it wasn't. Let's go to that hearing now and hear some of the panelists who have some interesting insights.
There are an estimated 270 million cell phone users in the United States, about 4 billion worldwide. I would venture to guess that almost everyone in this room uses a cell phone on a regular basis. And most of us don't give a second's thought that it could harm us in any way. However, a growing number of experts think there is cause for concern. Indeed, some international studies have suggested that people who use cell phones for more than 10 years are more likely to get tumors on the side of the head where they usually hold their phone. I hope today's hearing will begin to address that question. Our first witness is Dr. John Bucher, Associate Director of the National Toxicology Program, a cooperative effort between the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, the CDCP, and the FDA to coordinate toxicological testing programs in the Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Bucher, welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you. As you mentioned in your opening remarks, there's only been 10 or 12 years of exposure to these agents, and it's increasing dramatically. And there have been some hints recently that there is an increase in brain cancers in people who have used these cellular communication devices for a number of years.
What are the considerations with respect to an additional potential risk for children using cell phones?
children have a configuration of their skull that does allow penetration of cell phone radiation deeper.
Are you saying there's a potentially greater risk?
I'm saying there potentially is a greater risk.
And what limitations, if any, then, if any parents are watching this on C-SPAN, what should they do?
I wish I had a good answer to that. I think the...
Well, would there be a precautionary approach? How about the use of earphones to minimize risk?
I think that's a good idea.
If they can do this, it would be better to have some kind of device like this.
As I understand it, yes.
Why hasn't there been done here in the United States to look at the epidemiology of brain cancer among cell phone users? And why aren't we a part of the Interphone collaboration?
Well, Senator, my understanding is that we do. In fact, NCI does support part of the Interphone study. The Interphone study is a large study in 13 different countries that is supported by or is being coordinated by the World Health Organization.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Dr. Sadetsky.
I'm currently engaged in collaborative studies of brain cancer funded, among others, by the NIH and the European Community. For over 10 years, I have been participating in research on the risk of tumors associated with cell phones, initially as the principal investigator of the Israeli part of the Interphone study, the largest collaborative study conducted today on this issue. And currently, I lead the Israeli team of another study, also funded by the EU, on cell phones and children, called MobiKids. In 2008, we published findings from the Israeli finding of the Interphone study suggesting a risk of salivary gland, located right here, salivary gland tumors among people who used cell phones for relatively long periods, when phone was usually held on the same side of the head where the tumor developed and when use was relatively heavy. It is my hope that the issue raised in this hearing will encourage you to promote research and take actions to ensure the safe and responsible use of cell phones. I would like to thank Dr. Debra Davis, who invited me here, and I would like to thank you for your attention and for raising this issue.
Dr. Sadetsky, thank you very much for coming a great distance, and thank you for your testimony. Dr. Davis, you said in your testimony, again, following up on this, is that you said that Interphone has studied people who use phones heavily for a decade, has found that where persons have used phones heavily for a decade or longer, there is evidence of significantly increased risk, literally a doubled risk of malignant brain tumors. The one researcher to have studied young people who began using cell phones as teenagers, Professor Leonard Hardell of Sweden, has found that those who started to use cell phones heavily before age 20 have 4 to 6 times more brain tumors by the time they reach their 30s. Can we get some documentation on that study?
Absolutely. In fact, I want to also tell you, unfortunately, that there has been a history here that I think we need to recognize. When Professor Henry Lai and Singh developed the pioneering new technique for measuring DNA damage called the COMET assay that shows you a tail of DNA when it's damaged, when they developed that assay in 1994, they showed that radio frequency exposure to brain cells of the rat could be damaging in terms of the COMET assay. The industry response, which has been documented and is in my book as well as other places, was this. First, they went to NIH and tried to get their funding revoked. Then they went to the journal that had accepted the article for publication.
Who they?
The industry working against seeing this work published. Then the same lobbyists tried to get the article unaccepted in a journal where it had been accepted. And finally, they hired other scientists to do advocacy research to try to invalidate the science. And when those scientists actually confirmed the work, it was never published.
What is the strongest evidence you have that exposure to a cell phone causes cancer?
The work that's been done on the COMET assay that shows double-strand breaks in DNA after exposure to cell phone radiation is very strong evidence experimentally. If we tie that with the human studies of Dr. Sadetsky and others that have looked at people who have 10 years of exposure or more, We put that together and we have strong evidence.
Well, Dr. Sadetsky has testified that you see something after 10 years. Is that an accurate statement, Dr. Sadetsky?
Regarding the 10 years, yes. But what worried me was that in my study, I saw consistent positive results, and they always appeared where there is biological plausibility. They did not appear in this group or in that group. They appeared in the more than 10 years. They appeared on the same side where the phone was held. They appeared for the heavy users, and they appeared in rural areas compared to urban areas. And this also has biological plausibility because where antenna is more dense, then the exposure is lower. So the fact that all of these indications appeared where they should have appeared told me that it was a really red light.
Dr. Davis, you said that a cell phone should not be kept any closer than an inch to your body. Is that what you said? I don't know where does that come from?
That actually comes from the BlackBerry manual, as well as from the iPhone manual. If you read the manuals, which almost none of us does, that is what they say. So by calling for warning labels, as I am simply calling to codify what the industry is currently telling us about cell phones.
Dr. Nedenko.
Last week, EWG released the results of a 10-month investigation of more than 200 peer-reviewed studies, government advisories, and industry documents on the safety of cell phone radiation. We found that the studies published during the first two decades of cell phone use produced conflicting results and few definitive conclusions on cell phone safety. But the latest research, in which scientists are for the first time able to study people who have used cell phones for many years, suggests the potential for serious safety issues. Until the science on cell phone risks is settled, EWG recommends a number of simple actions consumers can take to reduce exposures to cell phone radiation, including use a low radiation phone, use a headset or a speakerphone, choose texting over talking, and limit children's cell phone use. In conclusion, EWG strongly believes that the government should support additional research into this important health question, and that the public has a right to know what levels of radiation they may be exposed to, what may be the potential risks, and what precautionary measures consumers can take to protect themselves and their families from any adverse health effects of cell phone radiation. Thank you for your time.
Did you have something you wanted to add to that, Dr. Sadetsky? I didn't know. I thought you were signaling me. Did you want to?
Just two minor points. The first is that in Israel, it is obligatory by law to have the specific absorption rate on every phone that is in the market.
You're doing that now? Or
yes, already for 4 years now.
Senator Spector, I think you want to add before we...
Well, I have a final comment. See what the Senate can do on a Monday afternoon if a couple of senators are in town.
Okay. Now, there was a committee hearing. Arlen Specter was advocating for research, and here was research being done in Israel, but not in the United States. And recently, when asked by a panel just in February, Senator Blumenthal asked, how much money are you spending? How many tests are you doing? And this was all paneled by the pro industry of cell phones and 5G, they said zero. Here's the part that's concerning. A senator has access to all the scientific evidence in the world. He has access, or she has access, to the National Academy of Sciences, to the Library of Medicine. Their staffs have researchers that do nothing but research background on topics that are going to be discussed. That meant that they either knowingly excluded bringing to the public's attention during that hearing that there were 10,000 studies on the G1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 that showed danger and were problematic, and that there were 26,000 scientists that signed this petition not to go forward. They could not have not known that. That was kept out of the hearings in its entirety. So that's why I said at that that demonstration. It was a dog and pony show. During the past year, Senate hearings leading up to the rollout of 5G technology have made it quite clear that the race to capture first prize in the Internet of Things has little to do with popular consumer demands for improved Internet access. Being called the fourth industrial revolution, the hype is that 5G will provide Internet speeds up to 100 times faster than 4G. Yet aside from the idealized and perhaps hyperbolic benefits of faster Internet connections and downloads, 5G has been simply the way that the United States has a competitive edge against China to establish global wireless hegemony. The Obama administration and FCC, under the influence of the telecommunications industry insider Tom Wheeler, who I mentioned earlier, who served as the chair of the agency, launched the Spectrum Frontiers rules to mandate 5G rollout as a national priority. Therefore, rather than the fundamental incentive to improve the lives of citizens, more important is 5G's role to reinforce American global economic expansionism and military hegemony. For past presidents, and Trump in particular, economic figures hold all-consuming importance. Once estimated claims that 5G will bring over $12 trillion into the global economy, about $3.5 trillion in the United States, while providing about 22 million new jobs, so they claim. For the Defense Department, 5G will further harness global military dominance and strengthen the U.S. lead as the planet's militarized policeman. For the Department of Homeland Security and other federal intelligence agencies and local law enforcement, 5G assures far more reaching surveillance and policing of the American public. International spying and interference in other nations' internet and internal affairs will also advance exponentially. All the while, the telecommunications industry wets its lips over the certain forecast of rising stock prices and enormous executive compensations. For the Trump administration, the 5G rollout is imperative. Last December, the White House released an announcement that, quote, "It is imperative that America be first in fifth-generation 5G wireless technologies capable of meeting the high-capacity, low-latency, and high-speed requirements that can unleash innovation broadly across diverse sections of the economy and public sector," end quote. What we are really looking at is a competitive war the U.S. is waging with China, which has already installed 1.9 million wireless sites. And as the U.S. continues to lag behind, it is equally imperative that 5G opponents keep careful watch of the predictable rise of disease and mental health disorders in China. 5G smart cities will provide the government with total surveillance of every human being in your home, in your bedroom, in your shower, wherever you have any electronic device. They will be watching, they will be listening, as they are already. It will just be done faster. Think of all the young people now who are real hip, that they've got their cell phones and all they have to do is put it up to their eye, and with iris identification, retinal identification, they can immediately get access. Think of them also now they have with your thumbprint. Who do you think is collecting that data? The government. Who's it sharing it with? Private industry and all of the government agencies. They have your biometrics. We have become a police state. Unfortunately, only a few percentage of the population are choosing intentional awareness through intentional focus, which gives them an opportunity to see the truth. Everyone else is just lining up, willing to pay whatever it takes to have one more convenience into their lives without looking at the consequences of what they'll be paying for this. And by the way, it was T-Mobile's chief technology director, Neville Ray, at the 2018 Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain, and Sprint Vice President Ron Mercat remarked that city government officials will have the capacity to monitor security issues. The new generation technology, therefore, will offer a boon to the private security industry. For example, Wherever you drive, they'll know exactly where you drove, how long you stayed, what you said in the car, because every conversation you have in a car, they can record. Your cell phone is also able to record for them, even take photographs. And yet the average person chooses intentional neglect, which leads to intentional ignorance, which leads to intentional enabling and complicity in the new Orwellian specter that we are living in today. I will continue to keep you informed, at least those of you who care. Unfortunately, you're only probably 1% of the American population at this moment. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.